The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Sometimes you need to lose it all to find your way back to what matters most, and that's what my next guest, Ed Mitchell, had to do. Ed Mitchell, good morning to you.
Good morning, Anya.
Now, you went from being this high-flying TV journalist, newsreader, breakfast presenter, to down and out homeless drunk. It was very much a rise and fall, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. And certainly when I found myself in that position, I thought, what on earth had happened? I mean, there I was, a business journalist for 30 years, a good degree from a university, psychology of all things, having, you know, traveled the world, five-star hotels, good family life, to end up on a park bench was a real shock and a real awakener.
It was drink and gambling, really, that got you there, wasn't it? And the problem was that you'd seemed to be coping for an awfully long time.
That's right. That's exactly right. For years, I had been getting more and more dependent on alcohol. I was self-medicating. It was a stressful job.
You'd drink when you were going to work in the morning, would you?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, you as a broadcaster must know that there are occasions where you feel nervous before you go on air. Unfortunately, I took the view that one or two drinks would make me more human and settle my nerves. Yep, that's a bad tactic, I admit it now. But it was coupled with other family issues, rising debt issues, commuting to London. It was 600 miles a week that I was commuting, 4 hours of live broadcasting. It just got on top of me, and it finally broke me. Some people are more prone than others. I think genetically there is a proportion of the population that is more prone to alcohol than others.
What did the other homeless people, Ed, make of this posh newsreader lying on the park bench and looking for dust spots beside them?
Well, yes. I mean, to begin with, they didn't think I was real. I mean, I did try to keep myself clean. I spoke well. I still had some leftover good clothes. I didn't know how to behave. There's a lot to learn to become a rough sleeper. So to begin with, yes, they rather shunned me. But when I was with them for over a period of time, shared the horror of what it is to be homeless, and week after week after week I was still there, they accepted me, and that was good. There is a certain camaraderie among the homeless. A lot of them are ex-soldiers, actually, so that they know what a platoon loyalty is. There is also a lot of competition as well for good spots, the best cardboard and that sort of thing.
And around this time, this is around 2007, the other thing I was wondering about it, though, as well, just before we do what happened, that kind of turning point, that you'd, in a way, you said that because there's a couple of documentaries that have been made about what happened to you, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But there's a line you used in one of them about your recklessness. It's almost as if you had the good life, the well-paid job, the lovely family, the nice home, but you were being so reckless, it's as if you were trying to tear it all down.
Yeah, I think there is an element of that at the subconscious level. I mean, I don't remember ever saying consciously, I will take this decision to see what it's like to have nothing. But I think somewhere deep rooted in the back of my mind was, I'm not happy with what's going on. Let's push it until everything is wrecked, and then see what it is like to have just a rucksack and a sleeping bag. That was never a plan, and I really do not recommend it to others. Mm-hmm. But the result was I did experience the true nature of having absolutely nothing, and the only question in life was survival.
How did you feel then?
Oh, like an idiot, actually. I felt a complete idiot. I felt ashamed and, you know, because I have so many things going for me. I've never really applied for a job. I've always had jobs offered to me. I had so much going for me. To end up like that, I truly felt ashamed, and I wanted to be as anonymous as possible. I just wanted to slink away from society and let no one ever recognize where I had got myself into. Because it is pretty bad, isn't it, to a financial journalist to end up with £200,000 worth of debt, and for someone who cares about health and nutrition to end up as a drunk. I mean, it just was awful in my own mind, and I hated myself for it.
And, of course, you didn't get to slink away because not only were you spotted, but you were filmed, and you were filmed in your down-and-out state, and you were filmed in your journey back to sobriety.
That's right, yes. All along, some very good charities, Christian charities actually, did visit during the night. They would bring sandwiches and hot drinks and so on. And it was through them that they said, surely you're that chap on the TV. And they said, do you mind if we pass on your details to the local newspaper? And the local newspaper contacted me, and I did an interview, and I thought it would make maybe a couple of inches of column length in the paper. But it turned out to be a front-page splash and two pages on the inside. And you know how the media work. They all feed off each other, and it was in the run-up to Christmas, so therefore, you know, no room at the inn type Christmas story. And it just went national and indeed international. And it just struck me that maybe this is my way out. It was nice to talk to people as well, because homelessness is a very lonely business. Mm-hmm. And there was even one occasion where there were so many newspapers and TV companies interested in the story that I actually had to arrange a press conference, believe it or not. Naturally, it was in a pub, because mm-hmm. I'm an alcoholic. But it was the strangest of things that 24 hours ago, I hadn't spoken to anyone at all for ages, and then suddenly I was in front of a press conference. But my view was, look, I've lost everything. This might be my way back out. And it certainly was, because on the back of that, I got rehab, I got a book contract, and I got this deal to do a documentary.
And I saw a clip where you're filmed with your son, and it's a really heartbreaking little clip, because he's saying that the best Christmas present he ever got was you getting sober. And I'm wondering how you live now. You know, all parents feel guilty about their grown-up children. I should have done this, I should have done that, I should have done
yes.
the other. You
how
in particular,
true that is.
Yes, but you in particular have this issue, of course, of the drink and the way that you did throw it all away. And now you found your way back to your sons. But I'm wondering about living with that guilt, how you've... Have you forgiven yourself?
Not entirely. Whenever I see that clip, and occasionally I have to, because and I occasionally give these talks and use that documentary as a bit of evidence, and it's all over the internet, of course, it actually still makes me well up to think that that is the way that my Fred felt, my son Frederick felt. It chokes me up to see that still. It's still heartrending. No, I'll never get rid of the guilt. I read a lot of self-help books and so on, and they say don't think about regrets, don't look back, you know, think about the future, and thank God you survived. Well, I try and concentrate on that, but the thought that I was unaware of how much my drinking had affected them badly still makes me feel bad. And I must push that aside.
Yeah, it's something we all, I mean, to varying degrees, all parents have to live with. But in your particular, it's just he was so sweet, and it kind of almost summed up, you know, the loneliness of a child whose parent is lost to drink.
Yes, and only thinking back now do I realise that there was more time I should have given to their growing up years, but drink took me away, or more importantly, hangovers took me away. I was never a violent father, of course. I was a very loving father. In fact, soppy and loving after a few drinks. But you're not the real you, and I think they know that with the drink, that you're not the real person. No, I was never... I was a soft touch. I was a bit of a emotional drinker. I'm not trying to excuse myself in the slightest, but because... You know, the drink gets hold of some people, and It brings out what you are, and I would like to think that I'm a sufficiently soft and emotional personality that's what the drink made me into, a more emotional person, but not really present. That was the thing, not really present, not there to play the games of football or what seemed like complicated games of Monopoly, or there to make Airfix kits because the glue was all over my fingers because I'd had too many drinks. I regret all that. I wish I could have my life again. Aren't there listeners out there now that I'm sure are saying
a lot of people would say the same, but I think what you've done since 2007 and the programs that you've made and making the news, I know, did terrifically well at the Sundance short film competition last April in London. I think it's sending out a great message to a lot of people, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning. So Ed Mitchell, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.